I want to welcome you all to our class for Erev Parshas Vayishlach, 5771. And I want to tell you that we are on a path this year, God's help, and the path is to study the Yesodos, to study the basics. And the basics, I always start the class by refreshing the topic. What are we studying the basics of? We are studying the basics of, let's call it, the Torah reality. If I might be bold enough to say that we are living in a time and in a generation where Jewish people don't really have so much of a sense of an awareness of the reality of what it means to be Jewish, what it means to have the Torah, at best, our understanding is very, very surface. Like, I'm a Jew because I was born Jewish, and the Jewish people have a Torah, and there are certain commandments that we perform, and that's about it. Am I wrong? Just a pretty basic surface. It doesn't describe a different reality. It doesn't describe any other kinds of assumptions about the purpose of life. We basically have a pretty much what you see is what you get. But if you're Jewish, you came from a certain family and you do certain things. That's it. And that's why we need to learn basics, because the Torah is, not only is the Torah deep, but the Jewish view is that the Torah contains the secret of life and the definition of reality, and it's not what we see on the surface. So, my goodness, if we don't study what those basics are, we're going to be in the dark. So what have we learned so far? We've learned so far that we are all standing on a stage. And on the stage is Hashem, and on the stage is us, man. And who's the spotlight on? Man. And what's our role on the stage? Our role is to shine the spotlight on God. And how do we do that? Well, inside of us, there is a godly soul. And that can empower us to be godly, to live godly. And by living godly, we reveal who God is. How do we live godly? And these are all things that we've developed over the weeks. I would say there's like a passive way and an active way. The passive way is when we accept the things that God says. When we lower ourselves to be accepting of His wisdom, of His will, kind of like a self-effacement. But there's also the active, by how we act and how we develop ourselves. We develop godly powers and godly will and ambition and accomplishment. We become creators in the best scenarios. So there's the lowering and then there's the raising. But we don't usually think that way. I mean, our reality, our common Jew in the modern age, doesn't typically think of ourselves as great in that sense. Maybe we think of ourselves great in other ways, but we don't think of ourselves as Tzelem Elohim, in the image of God, revealing God's oneness. Why is that? Why don't we think of ourselves as great? Why do we think of ourselves as small? Because, and this we learned last week, I believe, because man is comprised of different layers. We have the body, which has all of its senses. We have the emotional structure, we have the intellect, and yes, we have the godly soul. However, the problem is that we're so much more aware of the first three than we are of the fourth. So naturally, we see ourselves as our body, as our emotions, as our intellect. We don't see ourselves as our soul. Rabbi Luzzatto teaches us because our soul is not developed, and it's not natural. It has to be developed. Just like a person will, every human being will grow up somehow, some way, will learn how to eat, will learn how to sleep, will learn how to walk, and other certain things. Learn how to cry when they want something, but they're not going to learn how to play the piano or learn how to be a basketball player or learn how to be a doctor unless they put hours and months and years of study and practice and diligence. That's not just going to happen. Well, neither is our spiritual self going to be developed if we don't put months and years of study and of practice. So since we don't see it naturally, and it's not going to be developed unless we develop it, and we're frankly much more distracted by all the other things that are natural, we tend to just leave everything as is and develop those things and not develop our spirit. And all of this is very, very basic to being Jewish, but we don't really know about it. Because unless you study, you're just not gonna even think that there's anything there. So The basics are pretty elusive. What we're gonna add this week, and we've mentioned it, is that on top of the fact that within us our spirit is so elusive and so hidden and so underdeveloped and so unnatural. But it's not just what's within us, it's what's all around us. We're living in a world that openly states, don't think about the fourth dimension of the spirit, of the godly soul. Just, it's all about the body and the emotions and the intellect, and that's all there is. So, not only do we not feel it in ourselves, but when we go outside, it's just going to be hammered in more and more. Now, what I'd like to discuss today with you is history. Because history is an interesting thing, too. In the common reality of modern man, what is history? History are stories. Stories, things that happened. Why did they happen? Because they happened. Why did this kingdom rise to power? Because it had a strong king. Why is it no longer here? Because another power was stronger than it and defeated it. Why are these people like that? Because they want more control. It's just stories. Why do things happen? It's like in Israel. You say, Lama? Why? Kacha. That's the way it is. Do you know that that's not Torah reality? Do you know that Torah reality says that history is not stories? Just like the Torah reality is that we are not just what we seem to be on the surface, but that we're living with God and we're here for a mission. History is also not just stories. We belong to God. History belongs to God. What is history? History is God's unfolding of the world. History is the revelation of the unity of God over time. History is part of the play too. Rabbi Ken Spiro from Eish HaTorah spoke here on Tuesday. He says, we're in a story. We're in God's story. This is what happens in the world isn't just kacha. Why did it happen? Because it happened. That is so non-Torah basic. It is non-Torah basic. So we have to learn. We said last week that when we learn Torah, then we start getting some of the reality into us. When we start learning Torah, we start looking at history differently. We turn from students of, you know, just reading history books to seeing things as God's revealing His oneness. That's what history is. History is God at work. So, I told you last week I get passionate because it's like, you know, it's like these things are so basic and yet we don't really understand them. We just miss them. It's not for no fault of our own. It's smallness. It's smallness to see us as just body, emotions, and intellect. And it's smallness to see history as just stories. So we have to get big. We have to get big with our Torah. So our sages teach us, and most students of Torah are familiar with this, that Israel is destined to undergo four exiles. The best portrayal of this, and I'm sure in this class we have done it many times, is Jacob's dream from last week's Parsha. Jacob lay down and he slept and he had a dream, and in the dream was a ladder, and on the ladder the angels were going up and down. And our art scroll footnote reads, Jacob was shown the guardian angels of the four kingdoms that would ascend to dominate Israel. Jacob saw each angel climbing a number of rungs corresponding to the years of its dominion, and then descending as its reign ended. So Olim, the Yordim, they went up, they ascended in power, they got to the top of their ascendancy, each rung being a year, and then they went down. So the first angel was Babylon's angel. Every nation has an archangel. Babylon's angel climbed 70 rungs and then went down. Media's angel, sometimes also called Persian, because they kind of shared an era. When the Jews were exiled into Babylon, first they were ruled by the Persians and then by the Medes. So Media's angel went 52 and then down. Greece, 130. That was a long one. But the angel of Edom / Esav kept climbing indefinitely, up and up and up and up and up, symbolizing the current exile, which seems to be endless. Jacob was frightened because he saw the angel not coming down. And God assured him that he would receive divine protection and eventually return to the land. That's the story of Jewish history. It's not just stories of things that just happened. It's God's plan. It was known at the time of Jacob's dream. According to the Midrash, it was known at the beginning of creation. I believe there's a symbolic interpretation of the words. The Ha'aretz Ha'yisasohu Vavohu. And the land was empty. What is it? Astonishingly empty, with darkness upon the surface of the deep. And the divine presence hovered upon the surface of the waters. What did Chazal say? What did Chazal say about that? Sohu, Bohu. Sohu is a reference to the epoch of Babylon. Vohu, the epoch of Persia. Choshech, darkness, the epoch of Greece. V'choshech alpnei tahom, on the surface of the deep. That's Edom, which is very deep. I mean, we're talking that history is not just stories. History is woven into God's Torah. I'm passionate. Okay, so what's this Edom? Who is this Edom? Well, that's this week's Parsha. This week's Parsha is history. Yaakov has been threatened by Esav, his twin brother. And he is coming back to encounter him after 20 years. And he is afraid of him. And he sends messengers with a gift, an elaborate gift. And Esav is coming to him with 400 men. And he's prepared to fight. And Yaakov is afraid of the fight. And he splits up his camp. And he says, if one half gets destroyed, at least we'll have the other as a remnant. And when he actually does encounter Esav, it's a very interesting encounter. No fighting. No fighting. In chapter 23. No fighting, just biting. In chapter 23, they actually meet each other and they embrace. And then Esav says to Yaakov, verse 12, travel on, let us go. I will proceed alongside you. Let's walk together. We're brothers. And Yaakov says, my Lord knows that the children are tender and the nursing flocks and cattle are upon me. If they will be driven hard for a single day, then all the flocks will die. Let my Lord go ahead of his servant. I will make my way at my slow pace. Esav says, should I assign you some of my people to go with you? And he says, to what purpose? Let them just have favor in my Lord's eyes. Let them go ahead. We'll be fine. History. Who is the fourth exile? Who is this Edom? Edom are the descendants of Esav. Esav is our twin brother. I discovered, combined with things that I've learned before and some other things that clarified, an incredible insight, with Hashem's help, an incredible insight into the nature of these exiles. And this is the reality of the Torah, and this is the reality of history. There's a famous exposition by Maharal of Prague. Maharal of Prague relates the four exiles to nothing less than the four layers of man. I don't know if you know me. I'm not into machshava. I'm not into thought just for aesthetics. To me, I don't enjoy hearing deep explanations of things just because they're interesting. I don't enjoy that. To me, it rubs me the wrong way. Because we're here to accomplish something. So anything which is a deep exposition means it has something to do with what we're here for to do. That's just the way I look at it. When I say that I've got this, that we have this insight from the Maharal, I'm not excited about it because it's neat, but because it brings into focus what we're here for. Sorry, that's another one of my passions. The Maharal says as follows. It all ties in with the basics. It all ties in with the basics. We are here to reveal the oneness of God. But we were created with a deficiency to be able to do that. Because we have this body, we have these emotions, we have this intellect, and unless we develop ourselves, we're just going to be that. And we're not going to be the godly revealers of God's oneness. Each of our layers can drag us down. They can take us away from the ultimate goal. Unless we repair it, unless we develop it, unless we harness it. The four exiles are there to challenge our four layers of existence and to get us to fight against it and to conquer it. What I discovered is that the four exiles are from distance to proximity of who we really are. Think about Bavel. Where does Bavel descend from? Where does Bavel, the nation of Bavel and its founding fathers, where do they come from? Cham. Ham is the most distant of all of three Noah's three sons from who we are. Ham from Ham comes Egypt and Canaan, the Canaanim, Cushim. Bavel comes from Ham. Says the Maral that Bavel represents the koach of the emotions. This is the term I'm going to use, the emotions. The emotions means, what is the human emotion when it is distant from God? It is the desire to raise oneself, to control, to rule, to be overpowering. Gava. Remember we talked about Gava a few weeks ago? Haughtiness, arrogance, the most destructive of all the traits. I'm in control. It's about me. Look at me. What is it? Ego? Edging God out. This was the koach, the power of Bavel. It is the most antithetical mida to godliness. Bavel is the most distant from us. They injected this tremendous ego, this tremendous gava into the world, and it's like a vaccination. You introduce a little bit of the disease, and that causes the body to fight against it and develop antibodies. Maharal says that spiritually what was going on during these exiles is that we were exposed to this mida, and then we were challenged to conquer it. The Maharal explains how we did conquer it. We conquered Babylon, we conquered Gava by studying Torah and creating the Talmud Bavli. The Talmud Bavli is the core of Jewish learning. It is a person surrendering himself to the greatness of God, because it's very, very difficult to study the intricacies of Talmud. Okay. We conquered Gava. The next exile was Paras Umadai, Persia and Mede. Where did they come from? Yefes, Noah's second son. Yefes is closer to us than Ham. And Paras Umadai, they represented the koach of the goof, the koach of the body. The body which says, pleasure in this world, that's what it's all about. How does the Megillah of Esther open up? With Ahasuerus hosting a party. How long was the party? Only 6 months. And he invited the Jews. And the Jews had to say, oh my goodness, the body is coming to take over. Esther says, stop. Mordechai says, don't go to the party. They went to the party. Esther says, stop. Let's have a fast. Let's pull ourselves away from this hedonism. That's how we overcame the galus of Paras Umadai. Then came the exile of Yavan, of Greece. Where does Greece come from? Yavan is the other son of Noah. Paras Umadai and Yavan. Now Yavan is the koach of the seichel, of the intellect. It's a lot closer to us. We love the seichel. We love the mind. But Yavan said, Seichel Enoshi, human intellect, that's where it's at. That's where it's at, human intellect. That is the supreme. If something is supernatural, if something is supra-rational, uh-uh. No good. Get it out. Only human intellect. That is the source. That is the highest. That is what Jews had to fight against. Don't believe in something supernatural. Don't believe in a God that you can't see. Don't practice laws that make no sense. Don't study Torah so rigorously. Beauty. You like the Torah? Fine. We'll take the Torah. We'll translate it into Greece. We'll make it beautiful. We don't need this deep oral stuff, which is goes beyond the rational thinking of man. We had to fight against Yavan. We had to fight against the supremacy of the human intellect. And we conquered that too. Baruch Hashem. So what did we do? We conquered the emotions, the negativity of the emotions that can edge God out. We conquered hedonism, which can take over. We conquered the supremacy of the human intellect. So aren't we done? If we've gotten rid of those, doesn't that automatically raise the godly soul? Why then does the fourth exile come? And that's the long one. It's almost as if, hey, we're just getting started. We're just getting started. We have thousands of more years to go. What are we doing here? What is the purpose of our exile? And who is Esav? And by the way, Esav is so close to us that he's our twin brother. And Esav is not just Esav. And it's not just the Edomites. But Ramban tells us, who did they turn into generations down the road? Rome. You know what Rome is. Rome is the Catholic Church. So these are our brothers. So what's this exile about? There's no more supremacy of emotion, no more supremacy of body or of intellect. So what's left? Let's just be spiritual. My friends, I say that when there's something profound. The exile of Esav does not try to promote any of the other powers of the human being. The exile of Esav says one thing. Don't be spiritual. Don't be spiritual. In that sense, it's a direct hit. See, the other ones, they don't say don't be spiritual. They don't say don't be godly. They just say raise the emotions. Be a ruler. Now, if you're a ruler, you edge God out. Be a hedonist. Well, when you're a hedonist, God stands by the side. Be an intellectual. God gets marginalized there. But they don't come right out and say, don't be spiritual, don't be godly. That's what Esav says. Esav says, I don't care what you do, just don't be spiritual. It's a direct attack on God. It's a direct attack on the neshama. It is a direct attack on being a godly person. And that's why it's so fierce. And it is our brother. And it is within us. And the exile of Esav says to us every single day, don't be spiritual. And how does Esav do that to us? How does Esav destroy our spirituality? Two ways. And now I'm going to share with you, for the grand finale, the comments of the Beis Halevi, who literally walks us through Parshas Vayishlach and describes what we have been living through in our exile for 2,000 years, all the way up to America, even though he didn't live to see America. But what he describes, I'm going to go slowly here, this is our grand finale, and explains what the total reality is of our position in history. He starts with the verse where Yaakov prays to Hashem before encountering Esav, and he says, Hatzileni na miyad achi miyad Esav. Save me, please, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esav. Hatzileni na, verse 12 in chapter 32. Rescue me, please, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esav, for I fear lest he come and strike me down, mother and children. What is the difficulty, the textual difficulty in the words, please rescue me from the hand of my brother, the hand of Esav?
You don't want the bee's honey, you don't want the bee's sting.
You're saying the answer.
Yes.
What is the textual difficulty?
Why do you have to mention the name Esav?
Why do you have to mention my brother Esav? The hand of my brother, the hand of Esav. I mean, we know that his brother is Esav, and we know that Esav is his brother. We must understand, since Yaakov only had one brother, why does it have to say from the hand of Esav and from the hand of my brother? This is the intention of the verse. you could explain. Yaakov, when he heard that Esav was coming towards him, understood that he will not escape from one of two types of attacks. Either Esav will fight with him and try to kill him, or he will make peace with him, he will let go of his anger towards me, and he will live with me in peace and brotherhood, like two brothers do. Yaakov was equally afraid of either approach. If Esav is good to me and loves me, that's bad news. If he kills me, of course it's bad news. This is why the Torah reports, Vayira Yaakov me'od vayetzer lo. Jacob became very frightened and it distressed him. It's also seemingly repetitive, because he was afraid of getting killed, but he was distressed of what would happen if he would try to befriend him. And that's why he said, save me, please, from my brother, from the hand of my brother, and from the hand of Esav. Please, Hashem, rescue me from both of these approaches. The approach of Esav, the warrior, and the approach of brotherhood. I don't want him as a brother, and I don't want him to kill me. Hashem answered his prayer. And that is why, when he met Esav, Esav didn't kill him, even though he came with an army. What happened? What happened to the war? Hashem intervened. Hashem calmed him down. So then Esav tried plan B, and he said, let us travel together. He tried the second approach. Let's live together. Yaakov, you're coming back to the land of Israel. Let's live together. And what did Yaakov say? No, thank you. And Esav said, well, let at least me send someone to accompany me. No, thank you. Everything that happens in the Torah is a sign for our patriarchs, is a sign for future generations. In the exile of Esav, the Edomites, whoever they may be nationally, are going to behave with the Jewish people in one of these two ways, just like Esav had wanted to do to Yaakov. In the beginning of the exile, in the earlier stages of the exile of Edom, there are going to be decrees and persecution and wars, and they're going to try to destroy us. Hashem will not let them annihilate us. They may destroy much of us, but that's where, when he says, I'll split the camp into two, and if they kill one, the other one will survive, that's not just a thought. That's prophetic. That's why we were never all in one place. If there was a Holocaust here, there was another community there. The early stages of the exile of Edom was murder. By the way, the other exiles, I don't believe, were after murder. Even Babel, I was just studying in Yirmiyahu, and Yirmiyahu told the king and told the people, if you surrender, they're not going to kill us. But we didn't want to surrender. I don't know if Babylon was out to kill us. They were just out to conquer. Persia? Haman wanted to kill us, but that was only to scare us. They didn't kill us. They really never did anything to us. It was a scare. Yavan, Greeks, they didn't want to kill us. Esav wants to kill us. Because, remember, the point of Esav is not to promote anything else. It is to oppose being spiritual. If that means if the only way we can get you to stop being spiritual is by killing you, we will. And if that doesn't work, then we'll have to destroy your spirituality another way, by befriending you. What he was saying when he said, let us walk together, the Midrash explains, he was saying as follows. Listen, I know, Yaakov, that you are religious. I also want to be religious. Remember, we're brothers. We grew up in the same house. How about this? Let's make a deal. Let's meet halfway. I like, you know, certain things, worldly things. How about this? You give up some of your spirituality and adopt some of my worldliness,
and I'll do the same. I'll give up some of my worldliness and adopt some of your spirituality. Why don't we meet in the middle? We'll live together. We'll all believe in one God. We'll all believe in the Bible. We'll all believe in reward and punishment. But you don't have to have all of those commandments. You don't have to study all the Torah. Let's just come up with some type of a happy meeting ground. You take this world and the next world, I'll take this world and the next world. Which is a worse threat to the Jew? Reb Halevi says that we've been through all the persecutions. We've been through all the persecutions. And we're still here because Hashem said they will not fully destroy you. But we're done. Maybe we're done with that, except for Yishmael. I don't know where Yishmael fits in. But we're really done with the persecutions of Edom. But we're in the brotherhood of Edom. We're in the brotherhood of Edom. We're in the brotherhood of a society. We're also moral. We're also ethical. We're also religious. And that is a threat to the Jew. Why do we have to be so fanatical? Why do we have to be so spiritual? Let's just be like the rest of the moral, ethical people of the world. This is the exile that we are still in. And we are going to be struggling with this exile until the light of dawn, as depicted in the wrestling match between Yaakov and the angel of Esav. So we have to keep struggling. So basics is, and it all converges. A basic Torah Jew sees that we have a purpose and we have a challenge, and that's what we're here for, to overcome this challenge. A basic Torah view sees history as God's setting and props and characters reinforcing the challenge and giving the real life opportunity to battle that challenge and to overcome that purpose. And we know what we're in. We know where we are. You are here. Here's the map in front of us. You are here. We are at the latest stages of Galus Edom. And we know what the challenge is. The challenge is, don't be spiritual. Just be normal. Normal, religious, ethical. Enough. Not any of this fanatical Torah stuff. This is our challenge. And if we see the Torah reality, we will see what we are. We will see what we're all about and what we should be thinking every morning, and we should be prepared that this, the world is saying, don't be spiritual, don't be spiritual, and we have to respond and say, Tzelem Elohim, Tzelem Elohim, Neshama, I'm here for God, Torah, and let's fight back. Shkoyach. Yes, Wendy.
And that maybe just the name, and she went by the word, but I don't know.
However we want to create it to our benefit, we don't follow true moral and ethics, which are only spoken of in the Torah and given to us in the Torah, and they're done in a way that we don't necessarily comprehend, understand, and know the reasons behind each and everything right that's being commanded to us, that it's on the scale that's above and beyond any of us. This is actually the Akedah, because this is the Ram that's stuck in the thicket, and that's where we are on the planet today, because we are divided. And at some point, when it becomes Israel and everybody, and as long as we do what we're supposed to do and hold tight to our Torah, the rest of the world, we are told, will wake up. It's not our doing, but we are the example. We're just being who we are so that the world can get clear as to what it's supposed to look like. And then everything shifts. We can't keep going in that direction. We lose ground, and we're not doing what we're supposed to be doing. We've got to hold tight with the tree of life that we hold tight to this. This is it.
She's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you spoke at the beginning that our soul or spirit is not natural and not developed. Are we talking the nefesh or neshama? The neshama is not developed? I mean, it's kind of like...
The neshama is pristine, but it's not... It's dormant in this world because it is overshadowed by the goof, the nefesh, and the seichel. And it is, it's like it's hidden.
Okay.
And we have to develop it, otherwise it'll remain dormant.
What is the nefesh and what is the
Well, the nefesh is like the, I'm calling it the emotions. It's like the, all the, it's above physical. It's like, I mean, survival instinct is part of the nefesh, animation, you know, ambition, happiness, sadness, anything in the emotional structure. It's above physical. It's not necessarily intellectual because it's more like an instinct that we have and that everybody does, even if you don't even think about it so much. Animals have an animal nefesh. We have a human nefesh.
Animals have a neshama?
No. No.
I would like to say it in an empathy question. Excuse me. The nefesh is your essence. A stone has nefesh. An inanimate object has nefesh. A living thing or an animal has ruach. Ruach is that breath of life. And neshama, that's reserved to either Jews or to humans.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little something more than nefesh, ruach, or... No, those are the three.
Okay, that's a different way of using those terms. What's significant over here is that the goof, nefesh, and seichel are natural. Seichel has to be developed more. Seichel is closer to neshama, but they're both recognizable, whereas the neshama is not. And that has to be developed, and it can only be developed through Torah. No other way. That's what we discussed last week. No other way to find, identify, recognize. It's not something that you sense with your senses. It's only through Torah. And only if the Torah learning transcends intellectuality, will it be able to activate neshama. If the Torah is strictly intellectual, it will just be intellectual. So that's why even Torah has to be done properly, with the right intentions. Yeah. Now, let's get Dr. Izuri.
So, Rabbi, question. How do you see the Muslims, for instance, as spiritual or non-spiritual? And the reason I'm asking that is, if they are spiritual, Esav, Edom is now fighting them. They have battles all over in different parts of the world where, you know, Esav is fighting Ishmael in different, you know, situations. How does that fit into this concept?
Well,
if they are spiritual, if they're not, you know.
I plead the fifth on the Ishmaelites, and I think I've told this to you before. I don't really know so much about Ishmael and its role because it's not one of the exiles.
I heard Daniel speaks about Ishmael being the final.
So that could be. It's not the one, the Maharal, when he describes, this is the famous one, the Maharal, he does not incorporate, at least in this exposition, about Ishmael, and therefore I'm not clear. I know that the Torah says that Yado Bakol, the Yad Kol Bo, his hand is in everything, and everything is against him. And I know that he also wants to rule, and I also know that he's closer to us, so maybe something between Yavan and Edom.
Who's closer? The
well,
the, I'm just saying.
Esav is much closer because it's
closer.
A twin brother to Yaakov.
Right,
Ishmael is a generation before,
right.
And it's not one. He didn't derive. He derived from one of the patriarchs. Esav derived from both. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, Dr. Brown, did you want to say?
No, I was just. I liked it. I liked your edging that out. That was very nice.
Well, you told that to me last week.
No, I didn't. I didn't.
Oh.
But the quip for today, of course, is: have you ever heard the saying, "One man's meat is another man's poison"?
Yes.
Yeah, one man's meat is another man's poison. Some people said one man's mead is another man's Persian.
Oh, very good.
So if you could only develop your neshama through Torah,
yeah.
Does that mean non-Jews cannot develop their neshama? They have a neshama.
Well, they don't have a neshama that comes from Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. They didn't inherit that neshama.
Where did they come from?
One of the other 70 nations.
But they do have a neshama. Does that mean that they can't, unless they take on, unless they become Jewish?
They don't have a nishmas Yisrael. They don't have a Jewish soul. And therefore, the accomplishment of the mission of revealing God's oneness has to come through nishmas Yisrael. Now, they can join, first of all, they can convert, and they can get a nishmas Yisrael. As Noahides, they can support and rally around Nishmas Yisrael and thereby partake in the revelation of Hashem's oneness. But they're not going to be the catalyst for that.
Not only where did that soul come from, where is it going?
You know, everybody's got, there's all sorts of neshamas. Mm-hmm. This is my mother.
That's right.
It's a gut neshama.
Yeah.
Neshama. And of course, Nishmat Kol Chai, Tvarech Hashem.
Well,
all living things have a neshama, but there's a Yiddish neshama, which is unique.
Yeah. And guess what our next step in the basics is?
What?
We mentioned this in the very near the beginning, is that who is this man that is on the stage? Which man is it? Is each one of us on the stage? Is it only some people? It's the Klal Yisroel. So that is a very, very complicated parsha, and from next week's parsha till the end of the book, it's all about the different parts of the Klal Yisroel interacting. That's the children of Yaakov are all part of the Klal Yisroel, and yet there's divisions, there's differences, there's animosity, there's jealousy. How does that work? How in the world does this character, which is not even one person, it's a klal, how do they, what does it take for them to collectively reveal the oneness of Hashem? That is a very complicated, and I have a feeling that all of this that we're talking about now is just the appetizer for the real work, which is how does Klal Yisrael, not just as individuals, how does Klal Yisrael bring about the Achdus of Hashem? That, I think, is our next basis, and we're not done.
Wow.